It's Friday! Yay!
Yay!
And we're at the CAS conference here in Birmingham. It's Friday the 14th of September. No, June.
September.
It's the month after that. And there's loads of people here today. It's great. And I'm here with Phil Bagg. Phil, tell us, what do you do and who are you?
I teach some computing science in five primary schools.
Five primary schools? Gosh. Are you collecting like badges? On
I'm working on my sixth, but give me a bit of time. Yeah. You know.
And we also have Mark Dorling. What do you do, Mark?
I'm a teacher of primary and secondary computing.
Ooh, so you sit in both camps.
If you want to describe it like that, yes.
And I also have Neil Brown.
So I work at university, working on BlueJay and Greenfoot, which are educational programming environments.
Great. Now, we're going to leave the room and we're going to head and get some coffee. And on the way, we can talk about... Because some people have sent me some questions today saying, I'm actually teaching Key Stage 2, and I want to know what kind of things can we use. So is that okay if we walk
and
talk?
Yeah, of course.
So, Phil, people have said to me, they're digging Scratch, they're really into Kodu, and they'd like to know what other programming tools can you use in Key Stage 2 that would suit either tablets or desktop devices? So any suggestions?
I think it's worth saying that there is less stuff for the tablets.
Yes. And it's a real shame.
Although it is growing, yes, because is you can use Scratch 2.0 online now.
Yes. Except it uses Flash and it doesn't work on an iPad.
But if you use the browser that accepts Flash, yes. Which I think there's one called, not Penguin, but... I've forgotten what it's called, and Scratch 2.0 does work on it. It's still a little buggy. Mm. There are a few things like when you're double clicking on things like changing the speed of something, it didn't always bring up the keyboard.
A bit glitchy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
but it works.
A little bit way to go. Yeah.
There's also some really nice apps now, 69p, that allow you to teach or start to teach.
I've seen one like a dinosaur in or something.
Yes. Yeah, there's that one. And there's a BeeBot one as well.
Oh, BeeBot, which is like a bit like Logo-esque, isn't it?
Yes.
You make things move forward and backwards.
So rather than having the BeeBots as car robot things that travel around the classroom, you can actually now have it as an app, although you can do that in Scratch also if you want to be cheap. And the other thing that you can do is download Python onto your iPads.
Of course.
And that's 69p, and that's quite cool as well. So if you want to introduce children to Python slightly different way, that's an idea.
Have you actually used this Python app? They have different names, don't they? You don't remember the name of that one?
I haven't got a clue of it, to be honest with you, Alan. I have used it. It was quite good. There's one for basic JavaScript as well. So if you're introducing HTML and you fancy a challenge in extending your children, then you can do that.
I'd have to say, though, I still wouldn't throw away your PCs. At this point in time. I think, let's have good mixed models so that kids have a real variety of...
And of course, there is computing without computing. The best and the most interactive and fun activities you can have with a primary school class is actually having them out of their seats. Having them out of their seats doing some really cool stuff. Like the other day, we did magic tricks and we did some drama where they wrote a script for it for Harry Potter.
And you can turn them into BeeBots as well, your pupils.
Yes,
robots.
Robot teacher, robot children.
Although robot children aren't as much fun as you might think they are.
I've realised I've left my laptop back in that.
Do you want
space
to turn around and go there?
Yeah, well, I'm doing a lecture later on, so a presentation, a workshop. Well, I run back and get it. Neil, some people would say, well, hang on, why do you need to move away from Scratch? Because surely you can teach all of these things within Scratch. Didn't you like to throw it into the ring?
Scratch is great. it's really good at from very low age group, but at some point when you start sort of getting very competent with programming, it gets a little bit fiddlesome to be programming in it because there's too much mouse interaction. You get sort of expert and it just starts to get in the way rather than enabling you. So that's when you might want to move on to sort of text programming systems or something like that.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you, and I'll catch up with you later on. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Now, I can't believe my luck, because here I am at the CAS conference and I'm walking around trying to answer people's questions, which is, how do we get younger children, like in Key Stage 2, so we're talking about sort of 7, 8, 9-year-olds, really, really excited and interested, but not just using the Scratch and Kodu. And who do I bump into? but Tim Bell, and he's here to talk all about CS Unplugged. Tim, just tell us a little bit about yourself, a mini biography for anybody who doesn't know what you're doing.
Oh, right. Okay, so I'm from New Zealand, and I'm a professor at a university there, University of Canterbury, the original Canterbury, I got into teaching when my younger, older son was 5 years old, and I had to go and talk to his class about what I did for a living, and I was competing with, like, you know, policemen with cop cars and nurses with syringes and bandages and so on, and really hard to figure out what to give to kids at 5 years old to show them what I care about as a computer scientist. And of course, back then, programming wasn't sort of really accessible to kids either. And
so you had this burning sort of passion inside to get this thing, and you're trying to make it tangible and accessible.
And so, you know, how do computer scientists think, and what do they value, and all that sort of thing. And I could show them a program and say, hey, this is a fast algorithm and a slow one, but you know, that'd be really boring.
Very dry.
And probably wouldn't mean a whole lot either. So I sort of tried to boil down what are the concepts that we work with and what are the connections that you could make and turn that into a game or something tangible.
Almost looking for metaphors that you can compare things to and analogies,
And trying to avoid the busy work kind of metaphors or the ones that a lot of metaphors mean something to someone who already understands the topic, but not to someone who doesn't. And also the busy work ones, like, oh, let's all be a computer and you be the ALU and you be the CPU and we'll pass messages, and it's like, so. So I wanted something where, you know, there'd be an aha moment. And the other thing is something that's really quick to communicate to kids, so that, you know, you just give them a couple of instructions.
And it just speaks for itself.
And it's a puzzle they have to solve. Sure. They have to work through it. And the other thing is that it's not about teaching so much as just engaging.
Well, this is, I keep telling people, I love this quote from Seymour Papert. It's the one which says, I forget the exact words, but it's something like, the really effective teacher, they provide the environment and conditions for discovery and invention, not providing them with ready-made learning solutions to say, there you go, read that book, and there are all the answers. It's about putting the children in a situation where they have to go out and discover the answers, and that is the learning process that almost happens by stealth, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. And it's constructivism and all that sort of thing. And the other thing is that, especially with computer science, the idea is that you want to get the students to realise for themselves that they could come up with the ideas. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've done with Computer Science Unplugged is just little puzzles that are actually things that are used on real computer systems.
This sounds like a fantastic philosophy. Right. But some of the teachers listening to this podcast were thinking, right, okay, all with your highbrow ideas, but just tell me one thing, right, because I'm in this classroom, this is not me, I'm teaching these 8 and 9 year olds, and I can't get this on the iPads to work, and this software doesn't install, and all this kind of, just give them one sort of practical idea that they can maybe look for online and go, hey, Tim's giving me an answer here. So how could they get children excited or engaged? One solution.
Yeah. Wow. It depends so much on the age and so on. But, you know, one that's sort of really different is what's called a finite state automaton.
Finite state automaton. So it's like a robot that...
Well, no. Okay, so and of course I don't use that word with them.
Okay.
So it's a treasure map. So which is the metaphor?
Okay.
And we give out a thing with a bunch of islands on it, and there's a pirate commuting service between these islands. And you know, deadpan, you know, pirate commuting service like you get every day. But the map doesn't tell you which pirates will take you between which islands, and you have to get to Treasure Island. Mm-hmm. And so you're on an island, and you can ask for ship A or ship B. And we give them this map with just the islands, and we sometimes have people around the playground or around the room.
Oh, so they're actually physically acting themselves.
So you get them away from the computer and so on. And so they'll go up to the first island and say, I want B. And that island will send them somewhere else. And they go to that island and they say, oh, I'll try A, and they might get set back to where they were.
This almost sounds like the travelling salesman type problem.
Well, it touches on that, in the end, what happens, of course, is that, like, we don't tell them how to write anything down, but they discover that they should have put arrows on lines between these things.
They're learning by accident and errors and mistakes.
And that they should have written A and B on it. And you know, some of them will do it straight away, and others will go, I didn't even draw a line. Where did that go last time? Because they could end up back where they started, and they're trying to find their way to Treasure Island. And you know, the kids will get there. It's no problem. But then at the end, That structure that they've drawn is what a computer scientist calls a finite state automaton.
Wow.
And that is, and sometimes I use that word and they go, well, you know, they can impress people with the name, but it's just a bunch of arrows and lines. But then we show them a whole lot of powerful things you can do with it. So you can analyze an interface using a finite state automaton, or you can, everything that people type into a programming language goes through a finite state automaton that checks that what you're typing in the language is actually syntactically correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes,
if you had a syntax error, then it's probably been through one of these devices. To, you know, and when I say device, it's just a thing that says,
like
what's the next symbol and what state do we go into next?
So if somebody's listening to this and they're thinking, that's what I want to do.
Yeah,
how do they find it? Do they just type in CS Unplugged Finite State Automaton?
That would find it, or just csunplugged.org. And there's about 20 or 30 things there, and one of them's called Pirate Islands or Treasure Islands.
As a fan of CS Unplugged, one of the things I've really liked is all these materials, they're freely downloadable, they're out there, you can print them and do whatever. But I've also liked, I found a lot of YouTube videos as well, where people have sometimes actually filmed doing this with a class.
Yeah.
And if you don't really understand the instructions, you know you've got that video as well that you can refer to see.
And we found that's really important, because the instructions are kind of boring PDF files. It's all free, and you can get it and all that sort of stuff, and it's all there. But the videos show you what it looks like. And just one thing, don't show the videos to kids.
Oh,
yeah, like
you're showing the solution then, the ready-made learning.
Well, not just that. It's like, look at all these kids in this video having fun running around a playground or solving this. It's like, so the point of that is it shows teachers what
how
it would look like if you did
it.
And you know, generally how simple it is. You know.
Well, Tim Bell of CS Unplugged, thank you very much. And you're going to do your session now.
I'd better get on with it.
Thank you. So we've just finished a session with Tim Bell on CS Unplugged, which was brilliant. And I interviewed him just a moment ago for the podcast. And now I'm walking with Susan Robson. And Susan, it's been fantastic to meet you. You're the author of the GCSE Computing textbook that I've been using with my Year 10 class.
Yeah, that's right.
Does it give you a little bit of a buzz to know that there's thousands of children all over the country using this textbook and teachers everywhere?
It does, actually. It's really exciting because I wrote it mainly for my class because there was nothing available, and they actually helped me write it because they proofread the first chapters to make sure it was
brilliant.
The sort of thing they wanted.
So it's like field testing,
yes,
almost.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I love, there's a nice little preface at the beginning of the book where you talk about, you've got like some 25-meter swimming award or something you mentioned, which kind of made me feel a little bit more like, gosh, this person is actually a human being that's written this book.
And I'm glad that came across, because I'm just teaching it the same as everybody else, and I've tried to put what my kids wanted in the book and what would be useful for teachers.
And there's been a recent revision of the book as well, hasn't there, where you've added a few extra things.
I was hoping that OCR would validate the book and that they would say it matched their specification accurately. And in order to do that, they wanted an extra two pages putting in. But the content is pretty much the same, to be honest. And the extra two pages are available free as well.
And when I first started teaching this 2 years ago, I either wasn't aware of the book or it may not have been published then. And I really felt like it was a real struggle, but when I discovered it, I thought, wow, you know, this has been really helpful.
Excellent.
So what I was actually doing when I started teaching with my, I have two classes of year 10 and year 11. When I started teaching with my year 10s in September, I was doing one or two lessons a week using theory, and I wasn't actually using your textbook in the first instance, but I wasn't really getting the right kind of response that I wanted. So I've now been using the textbook to set exercises for them to, they have to read a section, understand it, summarise it, and then we test them every six lessons on that. And what I've been trying to do in this podcast is share some of the problems and solutions that I've encountered as I've gone along. Now, one of the ones is my year 10s have spent about 12 or 13 hours now on the programming assignment. And I've got a real range of ability in the class. So I've got children who are only just sort of level 4 in English and maths. And I've got children who you'd be expecting to get A stars at the end of this GCSE course. It's a little bit windy, isn't it? Now, the problem with the programming assignment is I've got this spreadsheet I share online, tinyurl.com/10ACO1. And if you look at it, you'll see some children are pretty much finished the assignment, while there's others who, they're still only on the very first, I don't want to go into too much detail because it's a live task, but basically there's something where they have to do some random things and they have to convert things from strings to integers and this kind of stuff. And they just haven't really moved. And I can't go up and say, you know what you need to do? And I've tried doing whole class lessons. So this week, I hit on another solution. And the solution that I hit, I'm a little bit out of breath because we're talking and walking. So the solution I tried this week was a coding dojo. And what I decided to do was put the children together in teams of three. We had a driver and a navigator. And shall I tell you a little bit about later on?
Okay. Yeah.
Right, I've had to come out of a session at the CAS conference then because I keep leaving my laptop behind. Whatever session I've been in, I keep leaving it behind. So I'm running across. So I was explaining to Susan Robson just before about how I'd introduced a coding dojo into the lesson. And the reason I was doing that was because I hit on a problem. And the problem was I've got a wide range of ability in the class. And I want them to realise that they can work together more collaboratively. And one of the things I've noticed is I've been to some dojos, and there's one particular one I'm a big fan of, is the London Python Coder Dojo, where they all agree on a topic that they're going to work on in the evening, and then people go off and work in little teams, and then at the end you have a show and tell. So I decided with the Year 10 class I was going to try and bring this into my lesson. So on Monday, when we had our first lesson, I explained a little bit of the practicalities of how a dojo worked and the reason why we're doing it, so that they could share and work collaboratively. And we could do this at this stage because this is not their coursework, they're not being assessed on it, but it was good for them to kind of like a new muscle to exercise it and get used to it. Because what had happened was we did a model assignment, like a practice for the coursework programming assignment, and it hadn't really helped, because I still noticed the ones who really need help still really need help, and the ones who don't help need help, well, they were kind of okay. And it's so all the time I'm looking for strategies or methods I can use that mean the children are not relying on me, the teacher. So back to Monday's lesson. So in the lesson, I randomly assigned them to different teams, and I say random, I tried to make sure that there was a good spread of ability in each team. And we came up with a long list of topics, and I said, right, well, today we're going to build in Scratch. So we narrowed it down to one, and it was a model of a Connect Four game. Now, they worked in teams of threes, so we had three roles within each team. We had with a driver, so that's the person who uses the keyboard and the mouse. We had a navigator, that's the one who's giving instructions all the time, saying, right, click this here, move that over there, drag this, click. And then we had a third role, which I'm just going to explain now. I'm just going to get my laptop out of this room first. Oh, sorry, short break then. So, driver navigator, really easy one, sort of pretty straightforward, doesn't need a lot of explanation. But the third role, I decided to make them assign them as like a reporter. So I gave them a piece of paper, and what they had to do was like every 2 or 3 minutes, jot down a timestamp on the piece of paper, and a description of the activity that was going on. But I also said to them that, like an interviewer, I wanted them to ask questions of the driver and the navigator about what was going on. Now, as the lesson went on, the sort of the wonky wheel, or the bit that didn't seem to be working quite as well, was this third role. And I suppose it didn't fit that smoothly into the lesson. So anyway, the end of the lesson, we finished it up. I have left out an important bit. So there was, every 5 minutes or so, I had a timer, and we would swap roles. So what would happen is that, so like a 3 minutes left, 2 minutes, one, and swap. So driver became the navigator, the navigator became the reporter, and the reporter then became the new driver, navigator, whichever one I've not said. So you get the idea, they move around. And we did this, so I'd say we had three iterations of this. And then partway through the lesson, rather than swap again one more, I asked the drivers to stay behind in the driving seat, and then sent the navigator and the reporter to travel around the classroom to the next sort of clockwise station. So, and they had a minute, and then while they were there for their 1 minute or 2 minutes, they had to interview the driver that they had arrived at. And, you know, interrogate, how have you tried to solve or build or create the Connect4 model? So we tried this two or three times, and then after that, the navigator and reporter had to return back to their home base and then explain to their driver what different solutions they'd seen as they travelled around the room. And then they had like another 5 or 10 minutes or so to implement, you know, any ideas that they could beg, steal or borrow that they'd seen from the stations that they'd visited. So that was pretty much our 1 hour lesson. Now, because it's a fairly new model, it's not something I've tried before with the class. There was a few teething issues, trying to make things clear. But at the back of my mind all the time, I kept feeling like this third person, this third role wasn't really working in the way I'd imagined. Maybe I wasn't that clear about how it was going to work. So I decided I'd try it again the next lesson. And in the next lesson, what I wanted to do was to figure out what was going to happen with this third person role. Now, the reason why I'm doing this, as I mentioned before, this is to help give the children the clarity or the insight to see that they can get support from others in the class and that they should be supporting others in the class as well. Because I also explained how in industry it's very unusual, very rare for one developer just to work on their own from start to finish. That programming, coding solutions works best when you've got collaboration going on. So in our following lesson that we had on Wednesday, I set the theme this time. So we didn't band around like all the different themes and what they could be. And the theme I set for them, right, so this is all from memory. I seem to remember that in one of the Monty Python films, it was in the Holy Grail, there's a bit where King Arthur and his knights turn up at this wall, and there's this sort of French soldier, and he starts shouting insults at them over the wall, and it's the insults are like bizarre and weird and very random. And I thought, we're trying to look at how we can create random things in Python. So we watched the 2 minutes or so of this video clip, and even though it's quite old, they still thought it was amusing. I said, now what we're going to attempt to do is to use Python to build something that's going to generate random insults. Now, I had to set down a few ground rules. We're not looking for swear words. We're looking for things that kind of are just as funny or as senseless as the ones in the film. Now, because I'd put down the groundwork in the previous lesson where I'd explained to them how it was going to work with Coder, sorry, driver, navigator, and that bit seemed to actually, we didn't have the wobbly start that we had. Everybody pretty much wanted to engage with it. But I still had the problem of what to do with the third person. So this time what I said was the third person had to interrogate, they had to ask questions, but at the same time they could swap roles and they could also become a researcher. So they could go out and find some sort of examples of insults online. And I suppose because it was more of a sort of hands-on doing things on the computer for the third person, that seemed to work a little bit more smoothly. But I'm still scratching my head wondering, do we actually need this third person? Because as the lesson went on and we keep swapping roles every 5 minutes or so, you could see that there's sometimes where some of the children in the class who were, let's say, not as self-disciplined about their managing their own behaviour, they would find that the time when they were the third person, that's like an excuse for them to get bored and their attention wandered off. And so I've decided if I'm going to do this thing again, I think I'm going to stick next time to just having coding pairs, the driver and the navigator. And then I could then pause them and then ask them to write, record, note down what they've been doing and how they've tackled it. So that's what I'm planning to do next week. And I'm going to be observed by the head teacher in that lesson as part of my performance management. So let's say I feel I need to give a little bit more thought before then. Now, I'm going to wander around some more sessions here at the Computing at School conference, and I hope to, you know, get some little tips and gems that I can share with you. Now, I've just managed to sneak into the foyer before lunchtime, and I've bumped into two old friends of mine from the University of Manchester. Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Mandy Banks from working the School of Education at the University of Manchester.
And we have...
And I'm Andrew Robinson. I did the PyFo stuff, and now I'm looking at working on examples and interesting things you can do with a Raspberry Pi.
But you've both worked together on the PyFace, because where Andrew's kind of been doing the how we're going to make this hardware work, how we're going to make the hardware do what we want, you've also supported him in other ways with that.
Well, yeah? Just trying to get it into the classrooms, really. Yeah. So, there's a great project going on at a school in Manchester near the university at the moment where they're trying to emulate this Pi into Space, and they've been using PiFace to do that. Yeah. So
and
it's great.
Are they
to
planning
watch.
On making use of the new webcam? The camera module for the Raspberry Pi.
I believe so. But they started a few months ago, and it's an after-school club, and the kids themselves have resourced the components, so they've decided what components they're using. So,
Mandy, I first met you when we started talking about the Computing at School Hub in Manchester, mm-hmm. yeah. and you've been doing that for, is it 2-3 years now or so?
2009, I think.
Gosh,
was our first meeting.
So nearly four years.
Yeah, and we had 6 people the first time we met, and now we have 50 with a waiting list of 20 every time.
So you've really seen it grow.
Fantastic.
and you've got, it's not just now the hub meetings, I've seen you've got lots of other activities happening as well all around that.
Yeah, nothing like as much as you've got. But yeah, we've got, we've done the Google distribution of the Raspberry Pis through the hub, and we've put on a workshop for that on the 5th of July, which sold out in 90 minutes, so we're putting the second one on the following week. And
so it's not really been that popular then, no?
Yeah, scarily popular, yeah.
And why have you come here today particularly? Have you got like a special mission in mind, either of you?
So I was invited and I'm presenting and telling people interesting things to do, so I wanted to show them the use of Raspberry Pi and PiFace on Springwatch. So we've been monitoring bird activity in the middle of Wales, and the Raspberry Pi is giving us new insights in how sort of nature is behaving. And so that I think he's really excited that all this cutting-edge science can now be given by schools, and they could build it themselves and discover new things about.
And one of the great things that I particularly like about this conference is it's not just all as a sort of highbrow academic, you know, HCI. It's actually about practical things you can do in the classroom. And the PiFace very clearly is a practical, you know, you can go and buy one, you can plug it into your Raspberry Pi, and you can say, here, children, go figure, you know, try and make the most of this. But as well as being presenting, have you been to any of the sessions? Have you had a chance to talk to anybody to see what other people have brought here?
Yeah, I went to Ajit's session on using the Raspberry Pi for computational thinking.
Yes,
building the new platform, which sounds really exciting.
But I would imagine you probably already have a few ideas about how to use the Raspberry Pi. Did he reveal anything you hadn't?
Well, I think he's looking at a new platform to address where the gaps are in the Raspberry Pi.
Right.
In the way that it's taught, which is a really nice
Did
way
he mention
to
C, C plus?
Yeah,
yes, that's I know that's something he's wanting to develop.
Yeah.
And Andrew, have you seen anything today?
So I was really impressed by the Blockly presentation. So Blockly is come out of Google. It's a bit like the way Scratch works, as you can drag and drop blocks around.
And it looks very much like the App Inventor interface as well.
Yeah. So I'm really excited by that, and whether I can that can lead to. I'll just tease you and say that can lead to other
so
things.
So whether, you know, maybe if we had PiFace in there somewhere and Blockly, whether there might be some. And even if you had a different device,
possibly,
I must have been very tight-lipped there. But one of the nice things is this conference provides an atmosphere in which people can share ideas freely, and it's that. So, is there anything you're looking forward to aside from the lunch? Anything you're looking forward to later on?
Yes, your session. I'm coming to your session because for me, the main reason for coming is to get things that I can then go and share with other members who can't make it today.
Yeah.
So, and it just looks like I'm going to get tons of stuff from
brilliant.
That I can share with all of them.
So, I think
people.
I've badged it as something like a roller coaster ride, ups and downs to take you around, because I really want to show people just practical ideas of here's a tool like the PiFace, here's a way you can go away and make it work almost instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, and I don't mean just about making it easy, because it's about how you integrate challenge into that as well.
Absolutely.
Well, enjoy the conference, and thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you.
So if you've never heard this podcast before, you can find more episodes by going to iTunes and doing a search for Techno Teacher, TEKNO. If you're not already a member of Computing at School, then you really, really should be. This is something like the 26th or 27th episode now of this podcast. And if you've been listening from the beginning, you really need to join Computing at School. Thank you very much. Bye.